Hi there, I'm Juliet, the founder and director of Pineapple Audio Production, and welcome back to the Podcasting Playbook. On today's episode, we are very excited to have Nigel May, the host of a Gay Old Time podcast, with us. He is also an author, a journalist, and a radio presenter. Nigel and I have launched three series of his podcast together now, and we are planning for season four. I genuinely love this series so much. We talk a lot, and I feel like we know each other relatively well, but going backwards a bit, I feel like over time, you've given me little snippets of the different things that you've done over the years. So what I'm hoping we can do is dive in a little bit to your career history and whatever you're willing to share about that, and then a little bit about podcasting and why you love it, because of all the people that I work with and have worked with, I genuinely think you're one of those passionate podcasters out there.
Thank you. You
really love it. And you make it your craft in the same way that you do radio. You put so much energy into it, and it comes across, which is probably one of the reasons why I really love working with you.
Hurrah.
But first, would you mind just giving the listeners a very quick overview into who you are and what you love and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I spin many plates. Obviously, we know each other because I host A Gay Old Time, the podcast, which I love. And that's been going for three seasons now, growing every day, hopefully. I also work for a radio station. I volunteer for a radio station called Gaydio, and that's the UK's largest LGBTQ+ radio station. And I do two shows on there, one called Waking Up Brighton, which is on the Brighton network. So every Saturday morning, I literally wake up Brighton with the best music around and some guests. And then on the Sunday evening, I do a show on the national network called Wrapping Up the Weekend, again, where I get lots of guests on and, you know, champion lots of sort of up and coming LGBTQ+ artists as well that don't always get a chance to shine. So that's my radio stuff. I've released books as well. I've written books. I've been an author for a few years now. I've had six blockbusters out, kind of like Jackie Collins, Chili Cooper style blockbusters, which was fab. I mean, I've released six of those, my sexy six pack, as it's called. And I've written a cozy crime novel called Quilling Me Softly. That's out there. A thriller called The Girl Unknown. That's out there as well. So I write. And I think that all stems from because my main job for years and years and years was I was a showbiz journalist for various magazines, More Magazine. I was celebrity editor on that in the 90s. I've worked for, pretty much every teen magazine out there at some point in my career or written for them, written for a lot of the queer magazines over the years as well, sort of like Pride and Attitude and magazines like that. So journalism was my career for a long time. Then I moved into TV, celebrity editor on a website for a while. And then that sort of lured me into the world of shopping telly, which is my main job in life. That's my sort of paying job. I worked in worked on a channel called Ideal World, which is a generic shopping channel for a long time. And they had a separate channel called Create and Craft, which was where I kind of found my home. It's like I've been working in craft telly for about 20 years now. So I did Create and Craft for about 18 years, left there a couple of years ago. Sadly, Create and Craft is no more, but I now work at a channel called Hobby Maker, which is brilliant. So it does exactly the same thing, provides all sorts of crafty entertainment for all of the people watching. So that's my paying job, as it were. And everything else I kind of do and spin the plates and see where we go just to keep myself challenged. So that's my kind of like life in a nutshell.
Oh my gosh, I love it. I'm a little bit goosebumpy because some of these things you've told me, the author side of things, I think we've only very lightly touched on in the past. And I think that's fascinating. So I want to hear more about your sexy six pack. I think that's amazing. But the pinch me thing for me has always been the teen mags that you used to write on. I definitely read. And then you went on and, you know, you've done so many things and you've spoken to so many amazing people. I hope you don't mind me asking, because I'm sure you've shared these many times. But if you had to pick out a couple of favourites from that era, and there are so many amazing things that you've done, but if you had to pick out a couple of your favourite highlights, what would they be?
Oh, I think because I worked in the 90s. I mean, 90s was, I mean, I started as a journalist in the late 80s. And I think my sort of like celebrity pop years were really kind of like the 90s as a whole, should we say. So, I mean, people that I interviewed back then. I mean, I interviewed Britney back in the Oops, I Did It Again days, which was fabulous. I remember I was working for Live and Kicking magazine and I was interviewing one of Westlife or a couple of Westlife on the phone. And literally then Britney phoned on the other phone and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to go now because Britney's on the phone. I just remember thinking that was a moment to think like, this is cool. Britney Spears is on the phone. So she was, you know, she was fun. I remember interviewing Destiny's Child as well when I was at More magazine.
Wow.
And we did this thing called a dirty phone call, which was kind of like, because when I worked at More, I mean, I loved working at More. I think it was one of my favourite journalism jobs because it was very, you know, girls, sassy girls. I mean, I am an honorary More girl, even though I'm a guy, it's like I'm an honorary More girl. It's like, for me, it was about the attitude and the sass and the girls that didn't want to take no for an answer and just had a little bit of attitude without being rude, if you know what I mean. So we did this feature called Dirty Phone Call, which was basically you would ask sort of quite suggestive questions, nothing, you know, too rude, but just a little bit saucy to people. And Destiny's Child just didn't get it, bless their hearts, at all.
Oh.
So trying to speak to Beyonce about, like, you know, what have you got in your bedside cabinet and not getting the answer that you wanted was fun. But I mean, they were a lot of fun. I mean, were they a lot of fun? They were very professional, shall we say, a little bit of a challenge, but it was great to speak to them. But yeah, I mean, more allowed me to talk to lots of great people, Jon Bon Jovi and, oh gosh, who else? I mean, it looked like any star of sort of like Neighbours and Home and Away and all of those soaps at the time. And I remember I interviewed Christina Aguilera when she first started and I was told that she was going to be phoning me on a Saturday afternoon. So it wasn't like a Monday to Friday. It was like a Saturday afternoon. And immediately I was thinking, oh gosh, she's going to phone during the Brookside Omnibus. I know she will. Because I was like thinking, please don't phone during Brookside because I've not seen it this week. And of course, what happened? She phoned halfway through. And I was a bit like, oh gosh, who is this person? But she was lovely, and of course then went on to become one of the biggest stars in the world. So I've interviewed a lot of people and it's just been, I like interviewing. I think every job that I do, it's like even down to the writing when I do research for like the books and stuff, it's like I love interviewing people. I love, you know, grilling people in a nice way to find out what's gone on. And, you know, I think people are really interesting. So I think every job that I've done has always been about, you know, garnering information from people. So, yeah, so, but the magazines were fabulous. I mean, I think the 90s were like the best times to be in magazines as well. I mean, sadly, you know, now in a day of social media and, you know, news is so immediate. I mean, I remember back in the day for More, and More especially, you would plan exclusive features. You would be like, okay, let's get Danny Minogue, let's get Martin McCutcheon, let's get, you know, whoever, and let's do an exclusive shoot with them. And what should the shoot be? What will the theme be? And it was brilliant. You'd get really excited about it. And when it hit this, you know, when it hit the newsstands and the shops, it was different to everything else. And now obviously, you know, something happens with a celebrity 9 o'clock on a Monday morning, by 9:10, it's everywhere. So it's just a different world. And I'm really pleased that I worked in journalism at that period. I mean, I still do magazines and stuff. I write sort of one shots for, you know, Taylor Swift magazines or Harry Styles magazines or whatever. But it's like, yeah, I think for me, the 90s, for my journalism years, was just such an exciting time because you could pretty much do what you wanted as long as it was on brand. And More was a great magazine to work for. I mean, it was iconic. I think of all the jobs I've had, if ever I mention that I worked on More, people are like, that's so cool. It's like literally that gives me the cool points in any conversation that I have.
As if you need cool points, but you're right.
It's always nice to have them. Always nice to have.
Yeah, it is a special moment in time. I'm such a magazine lover. I know it's sadly, you know, not the same anymore, but I did my first week of work experience on Sugar magazine, first work experience ever, Sugar magazine. And I remember I did a week in, I think it was on Oxford Street at the time.
Yes, it was. I worked for Sugar magazine.
Did you?
Yeah,
maybe we cross paths.
Not full time. I mean, I did some work for Sugar magazine and I think Bliss magazine as well were in the same place, if I remember rightly. But yes, I mean, gosh, that would have been... Ooh. Do you know, I remember being at Sugar... I think it was at Sugar or was it Bliss? I think it was at Sugar magazine when... It's a bit sad to say, but I remember it was when 9/11 struck and I think I was there and like literally everything came to an end. So that's probably way before... I don't know, when were you doing work experience there?
It would have been about 2008,
okay, so this is like way before then.
Yeah.
Way before then.
A little bit before then.
Yeah.
But I still had that vibe. I strutted down Oxford Street thinking I have made it. And I remember walking in, they had Apple Macs on the desk and I was like, oh my gosh, I've never seen a MacBook before. And they tried to teach me how to do it and I came up with ideas for that. And it was wonderful. And that was my tiny, tiny moment in there. And I thought the atmosphere was electric. I thought it was so exciting. So I can only imagine having had that chapter, you know, that still continues, as you say, today, but you really had that.
At
the peak moment, like that's amazing.
I love that time. I mean, for me, like it was a very special time for magazines and just I mean, the media in general. It was just really exciting to bring something different. I mean, I think, you know, nothing against any publication that's out there now, but it's very easy to be quite cookie cutter these days. I mean, I think back then, especially with things like More and even like working on the teen magazines, like because I worked for, you know, Mears, and my first job was like Lookin, which was a magazine that I read when I was a kid. So that was really exciting. I worked for My Guy, did all the photo stories and all of that. So there was lots of different magazines that I worked for, but every one that I worked for, it was always exciting to again, do what I said before, like do something on brand for the magazine, but something that no other magazine would do. It was just, it was brilliant. I mean, you know, Top of the Pops, Live and Kicking, all of those magazines were just a lot of fun. And just, you know, I count myself blessed to this day with everything that I've done. But, you know, going to work and, you know, one minute you're hanging out with the Venger Boys and the next you're talking to Westlife or whatever. I mean, it was just brilliant. It really was.
Yeah, it's a privilege. But I can see that thread through everything that you do, actually, all the kind of creative things that you've done, they're all like, you know, pinch me kind of jobs to do. And that's amazing. And I suppose it depends on your perspective completely, but I think a lot of jobs in the media are like that. And, you know, Gaydio must be like that. Working for Heart for me was like that. Creating the podcast is like that. It's like, do we actually get to do this?
Yes.
You know, and create things and share things. And as you say, your interview style, because you really care, it comes through and you give the energy and you give the time to people. Something I've noticed.
Well, this, I mean, for me, I mean, Gaydio, like I say, it's a voluntary job, but I mean, I love doing it. I mean, as a, you know, as a queer man, when I moved down to Brighton, which is where I live, I was aware of Gaydio, but where I used to live before didn't get Gaydio. It didn't really have it. You'd have to like hunt it out online or whatever. So down here in Brighton, it was sort of on, you know, you could just tune in, which was brilliant. I was just like, I really want to work for this station. I didn't really know what. I mean, I wanted to do, you know, I wanted to present a show, obviously, because that's my thing, to talk and interview people. And I am a complete celebrity ho. I love speaking to celebrities. So, I mean, I just got in touch with them and I was like, you know, can I do a show for you? And as luck would have it, they're based in Manchester, but they were launching down in Brighton. And the guy that I spoke to, a guy called Toby, who was kind of in charge back then, sort of said, well, you know, come in and see us when we're down in Brighton. So I went to see them when they were down in Brighton. And he was like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I haven't done radio. I mean, the last time I did radio before that was like hospital radio in my early 20s. And that was like literally putting the 7-inch single on the turntable and putting the needle on it. It was that long ago. So I hadn't done it for a long, long time. And he was like, well, what would you like to do? And I said, well, I'd like to present the show, but it's like, I don't know how to operate the desk. And he was like, well, I can teach you. I was like, great. If there's a solution and you can teach me, let's do it. So he taught me. And the next thing I knew, like, I mean, literally a week later, I was hosting the 2 a.m. till 7 a.m. slot on a Monday night, Sunday night into Monday morning. It was pre-recorded, thank the Lord. So it's like, yeah, I didn't have to stay up to that time. But yeah, I mean, and then fast forward 5 years and, you know, pandemic came along and all kinds of stuff happened. But I ended up working, doing the Saturday morning show, which for me, living in Brighton, I mean, the reason I love Brighton, I mean, is A, because it's a brilliant place, but also as a gay man, it's just the best place to be, in my opinion. So to actually get to talk to, you know, like-minded people from Brighton on a Saturday morning and play great songs is brilliant. But to go back to the question, it's like, yeah, for me, every show, it would be easy to, you know, inverted commas, just knock it out. But I can't do that. Even though it takes up a lot of my time, you know, I do a lot of interviews for it and interviews me in editing and all the rest of the stuff, as you well know, Juliet. But it's like, for me, it's about putting something out there that I am proud of. And I always want to make sure that whatever job I do, whether it is the podcast, whether it's writing my books, whether it's my TV work, whatever it is, that I am proud of the end result, because I don't really believe in doing something half-cocked. Then there seems no point to me in that. So, you know, I wanted to make sure with my Gaydio work that the show was A, reflecting my age, because I'm probably a lot older than a lot of the hosts on Gaydio. Probably the oldest. I'm trying to think. Yeah, probably am. But, you know, young at heart. So I just wanted to reflect that. But also, it's you know, for me, it's about championing people and giving people a place to showcase their talent, whereas maybe they don't always get the chance to do it in the big wide world because, you know, they're not on the playlist or they're not, you know, at the top of their game as far as notoriety and fame is concerned. So yeah, I'm a great believer in giving people a chance because people have given me a chance over the years. So it feels nice to, you know, give a little back as well.
Yeah. Use your powers for good.
Yeah, I'm not sure about powers, but yes, use my abilities for good. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Power's a good word. I'll take it, but I'm not sure about that.
Tell me a little bit more about the books then, because I don't think we've ever delved into this. Okay, not in a big way anyway, that your author life.
The books started because I was a journalist for years, loved writing, writing is in my blood, always has been. And then when I stopped doing the journalism and moved into the world of TV, which happened because I was working on the magazines, doing all the journalism, and it kind of got to around about the turn of the millennium and, you know, the internet boom and all of that. And I ended up working as showbiz editor on a website, well, for a company that had a website, a company called Where It's At that had like a website and had showbiz pages. And I somehow managed to get the job there. I had no idea how to put website pages together at all, but managed to do it somehow, asked the right people. So I was working there. And they then launched their TV side of Where It's At. And that's how I first got into TV, which I can come on to later. But when I was in shopping telly mode for a few years, I kind of thought I miss writing. So I decided that I was going to start writing books. And when I was growing up, I mean, the books that thrilled me were the books of Jackie Collins, Jilly Cooper, Valley of the Dolls, book like that, Jacqueline Suzanne. I mean, real sort of like dramatic, beauty-filled, drama-soaked, murderously bitchy, fabulously, you know, addictive, page-turning romps like that. And for me, I just thought, well, if I'm going to write something, I might as well write something that I would want to read and write something that feels like it's from the heart. There's no point in me trying to write something that I don't know about. So I started writing a book called Trinity, picked three characters, well, created these three characters, three girls, this trinity of girls. I mean, I just started writing and it was just like on my days off from the TV, I would sit at my computer and start writing it. Long story short, I wrote nearly all of the first book, Trinity, and then I'd sent off the first three chapters to a few agents, and of course, like nothing came back. And then I actually got a message back from one agency saying, you know, we liked what you did, would you like to come in and see us? So I did, and they were like, well, we'd like you to finish the book. And I was like, well, luckily, it's like I have just sort of like come to the end of the first draft. So I ended up with an agent for a while, which was great. Sadly, the book didn't get taken up by a publisher. So I then ended up self-publishing Trinity, which was the first book. I then wrote a second book called Addicted, another blockbuster or bonkbuster, as they like to call them, which I'm not keen on as a term, but that's what they say. It's like, because obviously there's some sex in them, but, you know, it's there for a reason. So I wrote Addicted, which is still my favourite book that I've ever done. I mean, nothing against the other ones. They're all brilliant, obviously. But it's like Addicted was just the one that was I just absolutely adored. And that did really well online. I self-published that as well. And that led to me getting approached by a company called Bookature, who offered me an online deal to repackage the first two books and then give me a deal for another two books, which I did. And then on the back of that, I got a deal for another two books. So I ended up writing six blockbusters and was called the male Jackie Collins, you know, the male sort of UK Jackie Collins for a while, which was great. But sadly, it was a numbers game and they didn't sell as much as the company wanted them to. So I ended up then writing a thriller because that was, you know, a thriller with a psychological twist that you don't see coming was very much the kind of like catchphrase at the time because blockbusters weren't selling in their eyes. Now with Rivals, it's a different story. So it's brilliant. So I wrote a thriller, which I ended up putting out under a different company, which I'll be honest was a bit of a disaster. I mean, the book is good, but it was one of those ones that just, I don't know, seemed to just disappear into the into a black hole, really, and like people didn't really know about it. People that did know about it loved it. And it's weird because everything gets a renaissance, doesn't it? And recently, lots of people seem to have discovered that book, which is nice. So yeah, The Girl Unknown was my thriller. Wrote that. And then I stopped writing for a while. I just thought, no, I'm not going to do any more. And then second pandemic, because I was working for a craft channel, I have such a weird life. I've been writing a Eurovision murder mystery book for a long time, which I still have, and that's on my computer, and that's ready to go at some point. So that's there. I've been writing that for like the longest time, literally since even before Trinity. I think I sort of started ideas for that. And I kind of came at the end of the first lockdown, I think it was, or maybe the second. How many lockdowns did we have? Was it two?
I think it felt like a lot.
Yeah, it felt like 400, didn't it?
Yeah. But
towards the end of a lockdown, I had finished writing the Eurovision book. So I thought, okay, I'll send it to publishers. And they were all giving me the same answer back. They were like, you know, we like what you've done, but, you know, cozy crimes are where it's at. It's like, you know, people like cozy crimes. That's the sort of buzzword at the moment. And like anything in life, I think, you know, people follow trends and you kind of get a little bit compartmentalized into things. So I just thought, okay, if you want a cozy crime, I'll give you a cozy crime. I work in the craft industry. That's one of the warmest places, you know, the warmest industries, warmest places that I've ever known, because people are genuinely like very lovely in the crafting world. So I thought I'll write a cozy crafty crime based around a craft group in a little village in the middle of England. And I did that. And basically I gave that back to a publisher who again said, oh, it's really good, but you know, the market's now saturated. I thought, you can't win. So I thought, okay, I'll self-publish this. And that book's done really well for me. I mean, you know, obviously the people that know me from the TV have loved that book, and people do ask for a follow-up, so there may be one at some point, but I haven't started it as yet. So yeah, so that was my eighth book that I put out there. So I have lots of books out there, and I think, you know, my dream, because I'm a big one for trying to like manifest what I would like. I mean, any of the blockbusters, I think, hello Netflix, come on, they would be brilliant, especially in the aftermath of Rivals. It's like they would be perfect for that. So I would love to happen. My thriller, you know, I mean, again, I'd love to see that televised. And the cozy crime, you know, I'm really proud of. So we'll see what happens with the Eurovision-y book. But yes, I am going to put that out at some point. I think that will probably be, hopefully, you know, in the next few months, I'm going to start thinking about what to do with that and just see. But yeah, I just love writing. It's one of those things. It's a lot of work. I mean, each book does take, you know, normally about 6 to 8 months to write at least. And then the crafty one I did quite quickly because I was like, right, I will show you. I'm going to write this book quickly. But yeah, I just love doing it. So the writing for me is very exciting. And, you know, I have those moments like I'm sat now in my office and they're all lined up on my shelf up here. And I just, yeah, that excites me a lot when I see that. So I'm really proud, even though, I mean, they're not really in the shops, as it were, because they are like, you know, online, you can get them Amazon and obviously the various companies involved. But I have seen them in the charity shop, though, at one point, which got me very excited.
Oh my gosh, that's so crazy. Yeah,
that was
exciting.
A moment, which was good.
You bring this level of passion to everything you do, but it really is impressive. I cannot imagine having the capacity to sit down and write. I love to read and I should read those, and perhaps I will.
Yes, please. Thank you.
I should.
There's audiobooks as well. If you want to listen to them, because I know you're busy, there are audiobooks you can listen to.
Having a little listen. But no, I love a switch off with a book. So I'll commit to that. I'll do some reading. But I think it's fascinating, the energy and the passion that you give to everything you do. And you really do. You really do. You are kind of the epitome of the multi-hyphenate career person, aren't you? You know, author / TV presenter / radio presenter / podcaster. And there's so many positives to it. I would also love to know when the challenges have come up, or perhaps there's one challenge that you really, you know, have overcome.
I think the biggest challenge for me, I mean, again, because I have like all these different little areas of my life. I mean, I think to go back to the writing, I mean, I think the biggest challenge for me was when, with the blockbusters, when I'd done the six and I was kind of like really getting, I was getting in my groove with those. I mean, I really loved writing those. And even I'd even met Jackie Collins shortly before she died, and she was aware of my books, which just for me was like the ultimate accolade.
Wow.
I mean, that was just incredible. And I gave her my books. She was just like, oh, so you're Nigel May, are you? I was like, yes, I am. And she was like, where do I read your books? I was like, I've got some here for you. So I gave them to her. And then sadly, shortly after she died. But I think when I lost my contract for those, and, you know, I'd written a thriller, which was what I was told to do. And then it was like, oh, it's a saturated market. We're not going to go with it. And I can't, that made me lose my confidence a bit. I was just a bit like, well, why have I sat and written this book that you said is good and now you're not going for it? And, you know, it's hard because books are very personal to you. They're like your children. If somebody says, you know, your child is ugly, we don't want it, you're like, oh my God, why? So that was hard. That knocked my confidence. And I sort of, it took me a long time to sort of come back to the writing, but you have to sort of like dust yourself off and think, okay, get on with it again. I think my challenge, I mean, I love the fact that you said I'm like a multi-hyphenate, which is lovely. I'm a kind of like jack of all trades, I suppose, but I just feel, I don't know, if ever one of the things really took off massively, there's like this huge back catalogue of things that I've got there ready to go. But I think the challenge has always been, none of them have quite taken me to the next level, if that makes sense. But I'm very much a person that I feel I always want to be challenged. So I think in those moments when you think, oh, that didn't sell as much as I wanted it to, or that didn't do whatever, it's like, it's just that the challenge is to get yourself back up and just think, no, it's like, I can do this, and have that belief in yourself, because that's not always easy. But, you know, my in general, my cup in life is always half full, if not like overflowing to the top and running over. So, you know, I'm never half empty. So I will always try and do something to keep me challenged and just keep me motivated and keep me, you know, keep those wheels spinning, really. Because I think, you know, challenges do come along. I mean, as I said before, it's like I'm not the youngest person around. And it's like, I think sometimes age can bring, especially in, you know, in show business, in the media world, can bring its own judgment. So I think knowing that I'm, you know, I mean, I'm 56 as we speak now, and it's like the body of work that I've done so far, I am very, very proud of. But I feel there's so much more, and I would hate to ever be judged for my age in black and white for like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. I mean, I think the challenge for anybody is to believe in themselves and know that they can do something if they try. I always say everybody's got a book in them. I think I've said that to you, Juliet, before. It's like everybody's got a book in them. So it's like, if you've got an idea for a book, you know, start writing, start doing it. It's like, just give it a go. The podcast was the same. I'd had that idea for the longest time. And it was only a chance meeting with somebody that led to you, that led to where we are now with the podcast. So I think I've been very guilty of challenging myself over the years by saying, I can't, it's not me, that's not, you know, that's not my role, I shouldn't expect that. But then I've got to the stage now where I just think, well, why not me? Why can't I do this? Why can't I do that? I don't take no for an answer, unless, you know, no is the answer that I have to face. But it's, I don't know, it would be very easy to coast, I suppose, and do, you know, on my days off, not to do very much and just to sit and think, oh, you know, I'm going to have a nice day today. And I do, you know, sometimes I sit there and binge Netflix all day, or sit and, you know, watch whatever. But it's like, for me, I like to stay active, and I like to stay challenged, and I like to stay, you know, the old grey cells ticking over. So, yeah, I think for me, that was always the biggest challenge before. Not to get disheartened when things always don't go the right way. I mean, you know, everybody gets judged in life by, you know, who they are, what numbers they have on social media, all of those hideous things. But I think if you know at your core that you are a good person, and I think all of the things that I do, I always try to do with good in my heart. It's like, I want to put good out to the world. So whatever that may be, whether it's, you know, hopefully entertaining people on the radio, or, you know, entertaining people on the TV. I mean, I get, you know, when I left my last channel, I got a lot of lovely comments from people saying what a difference I'd made to their lives. And that's very humbling. But I have such a gratitude for that, because not everybody gets the chance to do what I do. And I'm very grateful for doing what I do. But also I do feel, you know, my path in life has led me to where I am. So it's like, you know, everything in life happens for a reason. So all of those knockbacks, and, you know, I've been made redundant more times than you can shake a stick at. So it's like, there are difficulties that come along, whatever profession you're in. But I just think, if you know that you are good at what you do, without wanting to sound, you know, overly egotistical, it's like, because I know that I do put a lot of effort into what I do, and, you know, lovely people like yourself say that the end result is good, that does, you know, fuel your fire to think, well, you know, I can do this. So it's, yeah, It's always believe in yourself, whatever challenges come your way. But yes, there have been many a challenge over the years where it's like, you know, the job wasn't there anymore, or your face isn't the right fit, or you get down to the final two for an interview and you don't get it, all of that kind of stuff. Or, you know, I mean, with the podcast, when people say like, oh, I can't do the podcast at the moment, too busy or whatever, and you're just like, oh, come on. You know, things can be frustrating, but it doesn't alter, it doesn't affect how capable you are as a person of doing it.
You've got so much resilience and positivity, and I see it. I would believe it's also a natural part of your personality. But are there any tools, is there anything that you've leaned into in those moments, even the podcast, because as you say that's a moment where you're like, oh, that would have been really good. But, you know, also those harder career moments. Is there anything that you've leaned into?
I think, on those moments when my confidence has been shook for whatever reason, you know, I'm very lucky. I've got, you know, beautiful husband who is my rock and sort of like boosts me when I need it. But also, you know, I had a life coach for a while, and I would recommend that to anybody. I really would, to sit down with somebody and just talk about what's going on in your life. You know, not just the bad stuff, but the good stuff as well. And just to, you know, the things that I took away from being with my life coach was literally about listening to your soul and not your ego. And, you know, you can't control your first thoughts. So there's moments where you think like, well, I can't do that. Now I suddenly think, well, if I do think, why I can't do that? My second thought is like, well, why can't you do that? It's like, well, you can do that really, can't you? It's like, you can try. It's like, so there's, you know, you can't control that first thought, but you can govern and guide that second thought. You know, I don't know where I'm going with my journey in life, but I love the journey that I'm taking. So I think for me, in this stage of my life, it's always about digging deep and just believing in yourself and just knowing that you're doing right. So, I mean, it all sounds quite evangelical, doesn't it? But for me, it's like, it is. It's like,
no, I know it's real for you.
Well, I just think for me, it's like, you know, any of those sort of like inner challenges, those inner demons that raise their voice and that, you know, saboteur inside that says you can't do this, it's like, now I've got to the stage where I do answer back. And it's like, I didn't always do that in various times in my life. I mean, anybody in life, I think, has those moments when things go wrong, like professionally, personally. That's just sadly life, isn't it? But you can either, I mean, it's a cliche, but I love a cliche because they're true. It's like, you can either let it beat you, or you just think, okay, no, I'm not going to let this, you know, I'm going to get stronger from this. And I think, yes, like with my career, there have been moments when it didn't go my way. I mean, yeah, in another world, I'm hosting the Eurovision Song Contest. It's like, you know, I'm not working on a craft channel. I'm not in the craft channel. I love the craft channel. I'm very grateful for what I do. It doesn't stop me from wanting it. And I don't think there's, I suppose I used to think, well, I shouldn't ask for more because that shows an ingratitude to what I have. I think a phrase that I've used with you before is, I have a very positive dissatisfaction. It's like, I want to continue to do as many things as I can, as long as I can, and entertain people. If people, you know, if one person tunes in to watch Hobbymaker, the TV channel I'm on, if one person listens to the podcast, Gay Old Time, if one person listens to Gaydio, if one person picks up my books to read, I mean, obviously, I'd like it if it was a million and one, but, you know, it's like, if everybody that does it, I am very grateful for their time and for their feedback. And even, you know, when people have said, like, you know, there are people that turn me off on the TV because they don't like what I say or what I do. But I think that's better than indifference. I've never wanted indifference in life. I think indifference is a bit of a killer, really. That's a bit of a, like, that quashes any kind of excitement and zest for life that you have. And yeah, I want to stay as zesty as I can for as long as I can.
Yeah, I think you are. You definitely are. And I can see the mindset stuff that you're talking about. That comes through. I can see that. You're questioning, because, you know, you are a positive, resilient person, but of course you have those moments. And if you can be there questioning it, then I think that's a really amazing reflection. So thanks.
You're very welcome. I just think everybody has, you know, their own story in life. And I think that's why, you know, I love the interviewing side of my job, whether it is on the radio, whether it is like with a guest on TV, whether it is, you know, obviously with the podcast. It's like, you know, I'd love a chat show. That would be another great thing in my life. It's like, to sit down and interview people. It's an art. And I think it's funny enough, it was the art of interviewing that actually got me into TV in the first place, because when I went to work for the website company where it's at, that have the showbiz pages, they were putting a TV channel together. And they had some presenters in. I mean, I was sort of like early 30s at that point. And they had some presenters come in who were sort of early 20s, cool, trendy, fabulous. There was three girls, two guys. And they wanted somebody to sort of like guide them with like interview techniques. So my boss sort of said, like, Nigel, will you, you know, sit down with the guys, and because they're going to have to interview people in the shows on the TV, will you give them some guiding hands? So we did like a sort of a workshop for a week of, you know, how you interview people and, you know, beginning, a middle and end to your interviews, and know where it's going, and research your person, show respect to that person, whoever they may be. Even if you are not a fan of that person, you show them respect because they have done what they have done to get where they are. If they're sat there being interviewed, then they're worthy of being interviewed for a reason. There's a reason you're sitting talking to them. And at the end of the week, we did like a mock show, and my bosses were like, oh, we need a third guy. Would you stand in? I was like, well, I'd love to, because I'd always wanted to do TV and tried out for various things when I was younger, but it never quite came to be. And yeah, they sort of said, we like what you do. Would you consider doing a TV show? And I was like, well, let me think about that for a minute. Yes. So I ended up hosting this show called Mayday, which was fabulous. It was live, and it was kind of a bit anarchic for this channel called Where It's At. Every Sunday from the Trocadero in London, we had a studio that people could like literally look through the windows and stare in at you. But it was fabulous. We had like, I think Mystique came in for one of their first interviews ever with like Alicia Dixon. We had all sorts of people come in, and it was just, I think Bear Grylls came in at one point, I seem to remember, with his book, and we just had the best time. Sadly, that didn't get funded for long, you know, that horrible ogre of money. So it didn't really go to the next stage. But for those 6 months, I mean, that was brilliant. And that kind of got me into the world of TV and got me the showreel and all of that. And then I ended up working for a bingo channel. I was an on-screen bingo caller for a while, which I loved. And then I ended up in the crazy world of shopping telly, which, I mean, is a very strange place. But I think any presenter worth their salt, if they can... I think any presenter that can do shopping TV can do mainstream TV, because right. There's no auto cue, there's no script. There is like, learn your product. You've got 57 minutes to talk about, you know, sometimes in the craft world, a sheet of paper or sheets of paper. It's like, you've got to, you know, you've got to be
That's
able to...
That's an amazing test, yeah.
Well, it's an odd skill, but it's like, you know, you've got to be able to do it. And so, yeah, working in telly, I have loved. I mean, I've absolutely loved. But I do love the show business world. It's like, you know, I mean, I'd love to be a multi-hyphenate. I love that phrase. In all of those areas, which I do, but I would like them all to be even more amplified than they already are, really.
Yeah. And who knows what's going to happen next? And the podcast is a big part of that, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, the podcast has been brilliant. I mean, the podcast, I think, of for recent times is the thing that I've been most proud of. Because it was an idea that, you know, myself and my friend had for a long, long time. It's like we were talking, my friend Barry, we were talking about doing a podcast together, and it just never came to be. And then I was, you know, I sort of said, oh, I've just got this idea of like a gay old time, speaking to, you know, LGBTQ plus celebs of a certain age. It wasn't even necessarily celebs at that point. It was going to be sort of anybody of an age that sort of like lived a life and has been through the hardships of, you know, the hideousness of the 80s and all the things that went on then. And just people that had, you know, got through all of that, and we find them where they are today, happy in life, but their journey. But we didn't do anything about it. It was one of those things. It's like we sat and had all the ideas and we didn't do anything about it. And then that was when I used to live in Peterborough. And I'd moved down to Brighton and I was like, okay, I need to do something about this at some point. And when I left my last job, I found I had a bit of time on my hands, and I was at a launch with Gaydio, like representing Gaydio, and I bumped into somebody that I hadn't seen for years, a mutual friend of ours, BB, who was just like, oh my God, it's Nigel May, you're a magazine legend from the 90s. And I was like, blimey, I've not been called that for years. And we just got talking, and she was like, what are you up to now? And I was just like, well, you know, I'm thinking about, I've got this podcast idea. So I told her the idea, and she was like, you need to speak to my friend Juliet. It's like, she runs, as she well knows, you, yeah. So it's like, spoke to you, and you like, I love the idea. And I think, you know, it just gave me that spark to think, yeah, okay, this is what I want to do. And I didn't really know, I think, because I've been going through that period of, no, I can't do it. It's not me. I'm too old to do a podcast. It's like, you know, I'm not the right fit. I'm not that, you know, influencer-y person, you know, all of those thoughts. But here we are, you know, as we talk now, 3 seasons in, season 4 on the horizon. And it seems to be getting bigger and bigger. You know, 30 celebrities have already agreed to do it. And I've enjoyed every conversation with each and every one of them. And they have been hugely entertaining, hopefully for the people listening, but they've also been really entertaining for me. And it's like I've really enjoyed speaking to people, finding out their story, you know, people that you see in the public eye or online, but you don't always get to sort of get under their skin or, you know, beneath the surface, because it's, you know, with my stuff on Gaydio, it's lovely, but it's like, oh, you've got a new, you know, single out, or you're in a new theatre production or whatever. It's that lovely publicity froth. But with A Gay Old Time, I just wanted it to be just a little bit more soul searching and deep and chatty. And yeah, I mean, I love it. I mean, I'd love it to get bigger and bigger. There are so many people on my wish list for A Gay Old Time. I'd love it to be a chat show. It would be brilliant. But yeah, I feel that I'm doing good. I feel that the education that you get from listening to the conversations, especially if maybe you're a younger queer person that isn't aware of some of the things that have gone on before. And it's been an education for me as well. I mean, listening to lots of people. And it is. It's, I mean, the joy of a podcast, I suppose, as opposed to the stuff that I do on the radio or on the TV, is really there's kind of no limit. You can't, there's, you know, if somebody says something that is contentious, you know, on TV, you can't do that. On radio, you edit it out. With the podcast, it's not even about being contentious. It's about those things that are a little bit rawer and a little bit more hard-hitting and a little bit more gritty and real and authentic. Not to take away from any of the, like, froth of the pop world and the TV world, which I love. But it's just, for me, the podcast was a way of me sitting down and challenging myself again. So to have a successful podcast in so many people's minds has been a real pleasure and continues to be a pleasure. But yeah, that's the thing that of recent times I am definitely the most proud of, because I just sit there and I think, yeah, do you know, that was mine. I created that. It was hard work. It's flipping hard work, but it's rewarding. And if other people, you know, turn around and say they enjoy it, that's payment enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, I think it is, well, all the words that you've used, the authenticity, and it is entertaining. There are a lot of laughs in it. You do hear these stories that you maybe wouldn't hear elsewhere, but it's the depth. It's the raw. I feel it's an education. I feel it's a privilege when I listen to and you have a way of, I said this to you before, but you have a way of getting people to share. I don't know, you share, you make them feel comfortable. We, as a listener, then we hear so much more than we might otherwise hear. And it's, there are some real moments in there you think, wow, it's quite life affirming.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's lovely to hear that, because I think that's one of the things that, again, you know, if somebody said to me, what's your superpower? I think the superpower is that I do interview people well. I mean, I like interviewing people and I like hearing their story, but it comes back to a word that I mentioned just now about respect. It's like you have to have a respect for a person. And I think everybody's story is an interesting story. So for me, when I'm sitting down talking to somebody, I mean, yes, your questions are planned out and you kind of know where you're going. And, you know, obviously I was saying questions to people beforehand so they know roughly what's going on, but you never quite know where the conversation is going to take you and whether people are going to be willing to talk about what can be quite, you know, sensitive subjects or heartbreaking subjects. And, you know, a lot of the podcasts, because obviously I'm speaking to queer people of maybe more a more mature age. You know, many of us lived through that hideous period of the AIDS crisis and lost people dear to us. So to hear stories from people that were affected by that, that continue to be affected by that, you know, in life now with the people that they lost and the grief that they suffered, it's very humbling. So for me, it's not, you know, I don't go into any of the interviews in the podcast with an assumption that, you know, I don't feel like I've got to tick the boxes of like, right, I need that, I need this, because everybody is different. That's the beauty of that's the beauty of this earth, and especially the beauty of the queer community, is that everybody has a different story. It doesn't matter what, you know, which facet of the LGBTQIA plus you are. It's like your story is worthwhile, your story is worthy, your story is unique. So every podcast and every interview that I do has to be treated in a unique way, because, like I say, you don't know where that journey is going, but you've got to make sure that you enjoy the journey of interviewing and getting that story and listening to that person's story as you go along.
I agree. I think that is one of the really amazing things about podcasting, especially when it's done in the way that you do it, because there is space and time to have that depth. to treat it in a unique way, as you say. There's you're able to do that. It's not every medium that you can do that with.
It's no, special. Absolutely.
It's special.
It's funny. I mean, I've heard quite a few times with celebrities on their podcast, they'll be like, oh, I don't think I've ever said this before. And then they say something and I'm like, that's just lovely. I mean, when I interviewed Todrick Hall, it's like, you know, he's such an iconic sort of person within the queer community. So for him to do the podcast initially, because this was what season, was that season two or season three? Season two, I think, wasn't it? I think so. So like season two. And I was a bit like, oh, blimey, like, Todrick Hall, this is awesome to get Todrick Hall. And I didn't know, I didn't know how he would be. I didn't know whether it would be like, you know, very professional, business as normal, like, you know, the standard answers and away you go. And if it was, that was going to be great. But he was so giving and so humble and so warm and so informative and candid with his answers. And I think he did say at one point, he was like, oh, I don't think I've ever said this about something. I can't remember what it was off the top of my head. But I just thought this is amazing that he's chosen this moment to share. So if that is down to me, then that's lovely. But, you know, I don't think of that at that moment. I just feel blessed to have been in that position where somebody feels they can open up to me about something in their life, whether it's been, you know, a joyous moment, a euphoric moment, or a hideous, you know, bullying, abusive moment, whatever that moment may be. If somebody chooses to open up about it and tell their tale and share their tale with me, then I am truly honoured to be the person that can hear that firsthand, but then share that with other people who may also learn from it and be inspired by it and be motivated by it.
It is a privileged position to be in, but it's also something that you've built. You know, you've built those skills over time, and it's a skill as well as it's your natural personality. But
I think the thing is as well, because obviously my interviewing, I mean, I learned it through years of magazines and, you know, newspapers and all of that. And I think when you're interviewing people for TV and radio to a certain extent, then obviously it's very easy for them to sort of like turn it on because it's, you know, it's showbiz time. It's, you know, jazz hands in the air. But I think with magazines, it's like if you got somebody in a bad mood and they didn't want to do the interview, then, you know, sometimes you're like, geez, it's like, I mean, some of the pop stars of the 90s could be a little bit problematic at times if it was like their 58th interview of the day. Do you know what I mean? So I think so to be able to like do something different or show them that actually you're there for them, you're not against them, you are for them, I think is a skill. I think, you know, interviewing is a skill. And if you look at people like Graham Norton, I mean, he's just phenomenal at what he does. He can have the most sullen of person on his show, but he will still get nuggets of joy and gold out of them. And that's a real skill. And if I have one percentage of that kind of skill, then I consider myself blessed. But yeah, also I am going to pat myself on the back and say it comes from years of interviewing people, because there's been a lot of awkward people along the way, believe you me. A lot of awkward people. Sometimes you're just like, oh, come on.
Challenges accepted. Yeah, I'm sure. Let's talk a little bit about the mechanism of us working together, because it's interesting. I think it's interesting. And, you know, rarely do we get into that. So the way we've worked together is this is totally your baby and I support you on that.
Yes, you're kind of like the...
And I'm here as a cheerleader.
Well, a cheerleader and a midwife. You're kind of like the midwife that's delivered my baby to the world, aren't you, really? The way that it happened for us is I obviously had spoken to Bibi, who we knew. She put me in touch with you. You were really enthusiastic and effervescent about the podcast. So that kind of gave me that initial spark to believe in myself for the podcast. Then it was like literally, oh, my God, I've got to get celebrities for this. And season one, you know... took a while to get together, but it came together. And you know, all those things, like I say, I'm not very good with technology. I can sit down and chat to someone until the cows come home, but like technology and things like that, I'm not very good at. And that's, you know, one of your expertise. So for me, it's been a really joyous journey to get it to where we have it now, so that, you know, it sounds good. It looks good. The word is spreading. I feel it's the full package, and it's the full package that I couldn't have done because I wouldn't have known how to, or, you know, also, well, maybe I would have known how to. I don't know if I'd have sat down and thought, well, actually, okay, I need to do this, I need to do that. But for me, it's been a joy spending this journey with you and just being on this journey together. Yes, I know that I sit down and do the interviewing and all of that and then send you all the bits and pieces. But I always say, like, you, I mean, in the bit that I say at the end of the podcast, it's always like, you know, thanks to Juliet for making it all nice and shiny, because you do. You make the end product very, very listenable. And, you know, I know you've said to me before, it's like, I don't take a lot of editing, which I'm very grateful for, but it's like, or I'm very grateful for you to say that. But it's like, for me, it's like the end product, however much editing it's had, I'm always pleased to listen to it. Because I do, you know, I will sit back and listen to the podcast as well. It's like, I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to critique. Like I say, because I'm a perfectionist on so many things, or I do have a benchmark of a level of excellence that I always want to achieve. I don't know whether that's the same for everybody, but it's certainly for me, it's like my, I feel, you know, whether everybody's opinion of my benchmark of excellence is the same, I'm not sure. But for me, it's like I just want to make sure that I'm very proud of what goes out there. And you have been very instrumental in shaping that and molding that to give a great end result. So, you know, so it's been an absolute pleasure to go on this journey. I mean, yeah, we've had challenges. We know that. That, you know, those problems still continue. Well, not problems, they're those issues, shall we say. Problems is a negative word, and I don't like using negative words. Issues can be dealt with. Problems are automatically, oh, nasty, don't like those. So I think all of those issues that come along, it's like, it's nice to have somebody on your team. It's nice to have somebody that's there with you to look at the possibilities of how you overcome them. It's like, you know, we all have hurdles in life. Life is never simple, simple, simple. It is nice to share this journey with people. I think, you know, I'm sure I could have done it on my own maybe, but I'm glad I haven't.
Thank you. I also really appreciate that. I love being on the journey. I love us doing it together. I love feeling like we are a team. And, you know, it would be, there are worlds in which this could be a situation where, which is quite transactional. Actually, yes. If you wanted it to be. And I love that it doesn't feel like that.
No, it doesn't really at all. Special. I mean, you know that I hate discussing subjects of like money and things like that. It's like, that's a vulgarity that the world doesn't need, really. But sadly, you know, it is needed for lots of things in life. But yeah. I just, for me, my relationship with you as a podcast partner in crime is, or partner in podcast, whatever I call you, is the fact that I just feel I can phone you up. And we've only, like, we've only met once in the flesh.
Yeah, in
we?
Real life, which is so ridiculous. Crazy. It is really.
I always say there are people in life that come along that are part of your tribe. And I feel that you are very much part of my tribe and have been since the first moment we spoke to each other. And, you know, I mentioned about my life coach before, Andy, the guy that is my life coach. I mean, I don't have him as a life coach anymore, but he's very much there for me if need be. And all of those things that he taught me, we still speak to each other, but not in a life coach client kind of way. It's just, when you are surrounded by people that are in your tribe, whether it be professionally, you know, personally, like I mentioned, Al, my husband, and, you know, my friends, and just people that support you and people that know you and people that get you, I think that's really important. And I just feel that even though, yes, it is a transactional thing when it comes to business, when you are working, in inverted commas, with somebody that gets you, it's a lot easier. Or we should say easy. Life is a lot less. Life has the potential to be a lot. It's a lot easier to try and iron out those bumps if somebody gets you, because you don't feel you're battling against somebody that is on the, you know, on a different page to you.
Yeah, right. You're kind of overcoming those together rather than against
yes.
each other, and that's huge. It's huge. And yeah, there are many worlds in which that's not. I do often feel very fortunate that that is the world that we, at least you and I, operate in, and there are other versions of that world where it doesn't work like that. And as you say, life is much easier when you're in it together.
Yeah, well, I just, I mean, I'm a great, I mean, again, it's that respect word that I keep coming back to, but, you know, I'm a great one for respecting the talent of others. When I go and see a theatre production, I literally am mesmerised by people's acting talent, even if it's, you know, even if it's something that I didn't particularly enjoy. It's like to see people sing and dance and act and do all of that. I'm just like, that just blows my mind that they've got that talent. So that's their talent. My talent, you know, if I looked at it from the outside, is, you know, 8 books in, podcast season, 3 seasons, I know, a very, hopefully a very light radio set of radio shows on Gaydio, and, you know, 20 years in the crafting industry on TV, which has been fabulous and continues to be. So I'm very proud of my talent, if you like. But yeah, I just think if you have people around you, my talent is not, well, as you know, my talent is not uploading things and sorting things and doing all of that. It's like, I'm not good with things like that. So if we're talking about it in a very sort of like perfunctory kind of way, it's like having you by my side to do all the, to do all the faff that I don't get is like, is lovely. But also it's nice when you're doing it with somebody that just does get you, as I say, but also is, it, everything's done in a very pleasant, I mean, that's such a naff old word, but in a very, I don't know, smile making way. It's not, it's never, it never grates. It never, you know, there's never an abrasion between you and I. And I just think, you know, I'm a big one for hierarchy. It's like when I've had, you know, I've had bosses, I have bosses now. It's like, I always have respect for my bosses because they are there for a reason. If the boss says something I don't like, then I will be the first to say, excuse me, that's not right. I'm a big one for like injustice. It's like, no, I don't, I won't settle for that. But I do think in general, and I think this goes back to the celebrity thing as well. It's like if somebody is there and they are famous because they are an actor or a drag artist or, you know, a nutrition or whatever their skill is, I bow with respect to their skill because, do you know what, they've earned their place in life, and life is not always easy to find your place. So if anybody that's done that, then I salute them, whether it's, you know, somebody that has a dog walking business or somebody that is president of the world, although some of those I do doubt, but there you go. Yeah.
Let's not, but, go, you know, let's not go too far into that one, but yes, no, agreed.
You
agreed,
get me.
Agreed. Yeah. Nigel, this has been amazing, and we genuinely could talk all day. I know that much. Yeah. You've actually shared some amazing lessons already and lots of wisdom. But if you had to share one piece of advice or one lesson you've learned, and I'm thinking here about podcasters or people who might want to do podcasting in that specific arena of your multi-hyphenated career journey, what might that be?
I think my simple advice is don't try and shove a square peg in a round hole. If you're a square peg, then find a square hole, because it's like, it's got to be the fit for you. It would have been quite easy for me. Well, not easy. I mean, it would have been maybe sensible for me to think, okay, what podcasts are really successful? It's like, I need to try and emulate that. I need to be that person. I need to do what they're doing because that's the trend. And, you know, I said before about, you know, publishers or whoever in the book world or anybody can like trying to compartmentalize you into something because you are following something that has been successful or trying to follow something that has been successful. My advice to everybody is just be yourself, because when you are yourself, whether it's, you know, a huge success or not, at least you're being honest to yourself and you are being the person that you want to be. You know, find a subject matter that you enjoy. If for podcasting, if my skill, in inverted commas, is to talk to people. So there was never a question of me wanting to do a podcast where it's like, oh, I'm going to be a gamer because that's very popular, or I'm going to be. I know you laugh because yeah. You can imagine. Well, yeah, it's not going to happen.
No, I can't. I also laugh because that whole world elude. Like, I don't get it anyway. No.
But everybody that does, respect to them.
So massive respect.
Yeah, for me, what I love is, you know, if I had to do a little bullet points, things that I love in life, I'm so proud to be part of the queer community. So A Gay Old Time ticks that box. I am very proud to talk to people. So, you know, I love interviewing people. I love chatting to people. I love garnering that information. So that ticks that box. But also I am very, I mean, again, respectful. I'm trying to think of a better word for it. I should have looked in the thesaurus before I did this, shouldn't I? Another word for respectful. But I am just so, not even in awe. I mean, yes, there are celebrities that I've fangirled about like massively, but it's like, I just feel, I'm a great, what's the word? I can always respect their achievements. And I just think anybody that's in a situation that puts them in a place where I want to interview them, or, you know, I'd love them to be on the podcast as a fabulous guest for people to listen to, they've earned that right. So, yeah, I feel I'm the right host for this podcast because it's like I have the right approach when it comes to celebrities. I'm not there to trip anybody up. I'm not there to make anybody look stupid. I am not there to try and get, you know, oh, well, you've got to say this, you've got to say that. No, it's not my journey. I can't put words in their mouth. If I can steer them in a direction that makes them happy to talk, then that's my job. If that's, it's not a job, is it really? Now, all of the things that I do in life, all of my jobs that I do, none of them are like really like work. And then that's a weird thing to say. I love them. I love them all and I hopefully do them well. But it's like, I don't feel that they are work. I am very, very blessed to do what I do. So if I can share that with somebody on a podcast or share that with somebody on whatever I'm doing, whichever plate I'm spinning, then that pleases me and continues to fill my soul for whatever happens next.
Yeah, it's a magical, magical thing. Thank you so much, Nigel.
You are very welcome. Thank you.
Nigel, thank you so much for being my guest on the Podcasting Playbook today. And thank you for tuning in and getting to know a little bit more about the work we do at Pineapple. So don't forget to follow and review for more podcast episodes coming your way soon. Bye for now.